Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dr. Walter Dean for the show called Getting It Done. Last week on Friday, I received a number of complaints from people who listened to the show indicating that all they heard was music. I don't know what happened, why that occurred, and there's no way that I can really do an investigation or research to find out. But if you can hear me right now, I appreciate it. You sending something to me and letting me know that you heard the show at docdean1212@gmail.com. We're going to be listening to some black and very important people, starting with Morgan Freeman, concerning what they think about race relations. You'd be surprised to know that there are black people who have a different conception of race relations than what they might have had when they were first starting out. Or some of them have been able to maintain what they felt and how they were able to overcome. So without any further ado, the show may not go a whole hour, but we're going to listen to Morgan Freeman right now and hear what he has to say about race relations.
You and I, what race have you going to do with it? Stick it, put your mind to what you want to do and go for that. It's kind of like religion to me. It's a good excuse for not getting there.
Where are we in the United States of America in race relations and what you see from day to day in your life?
If they wouldn't want to ask me that, they wouldn't want my answer to represent it, because God knows I have been nothing but blessed. My whole path, these 33 years have been nothing but a blessing. Never is a strong word, never dealt with racism. I'm glad I didn't have to.
There's a class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances, because they do not want to lose their jobs. There is a certain class of race problem solvers who don't want the patient to get well. That was said by Booker T. Washington.
How are we going to get rid of racism?
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man.
You know, it's frustrating to me that people take race and they make it personal. You know what I mean? Like, we're at a loss in this generation. If you look at it in the 80s, Archie Bunker was a stark racist. Stark. If you don't know Archie Bunker, look him up. All in the Family, great show. The Jeffersons, stark racist. For example, stark racist. But you know what black people and white people did? They laughed. You watched 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte, both of them hating each other because he was black and because he was white. You know what they did?
But I asked you what the racial breakdown was in your audience. Do you remember this? You told me the only black face you could see in the whole audience was your makeup artist. I believe that's what you said. She was in the front row, right? A lot of white kids love rap.
Yes.
Explain that. What does that say to you? What's the message of it? What's the bigger picture of it?
I don't want to be bashed, because I don't want to sound like I'm on the road if there is a side, but I thought that was clearly a message that there is no such thing as this. That's what I thought that was.
You know, I said, it's probably getting me in trouble, but I said to some of my colleagues recently, I said, so I know that it's an issue, But I've been, it seems like every single day on television I'm talking about race, and it's because of the news cycle, it's in the news. But sometimes I get so tired of talking about it, I want to just go, this is over, can we move on?
And if you talk about it, it exists. Like, it's not like it exists and we refuse to talk about it, but making it a bigger issue than it needs to be is the problem there.
And right now, we are in a society where we can't have a conversation because no one's willing to listen.
People are just shouting.
People are just shouting. People are walking down the street, hashtagging everything, but no one's listening.
Using wrong examples to present an argument leads us nowhere forward. I understand the emotion, and I respect my opposition, but when you go into the areas of making false charges and living in the past, you do not address the issues of the present.
And you know, incarceration rates in America has been a problem, especially as folks of minorities. And Roman delves into this, the issues around the legal system. Do you think we've made any headway? And I think it's more important to make headway in our own house. By the time the system comes into play, the damage is done. They're not locking up 7-year-olds.
In the 1950s, 80%+ of blacks were two-parent homes. Today, that is reversed, completely the other way.
I was in Chicago a couple of four weeks ago, and we saw these little kids on bikes with masks on the side of their head, like 5 or 6 of them. And the driver said, yeah, little yummies. I said, who? He said, little yummies. Look up. Google little yummies. Mm. Little yummy was an 11-year-old murderer.
Yeah.
And you look at his picture, and you see the screenshot of him. He's like this. And he got murdered at 11 by a 14-year-old.
Wow.
Who's doing life now, the 16-year-old.
That makes no sense.
Do you blame the system? Where was his father?
No one wants to talk about perception when it comes to racial profiling. No one wants to talk about stereotypes when it comes to racial profiling.
Blacks are convinced that the number one issue facing the country right now is social justice, racist white talks, discrimination, systemic racism, microaggression, whatever new word they come up with, and it's a bunch of nonsense.
This is what I know. I'm a certified scuba diver. My first day of class, they told me that when you're in shark-infested waters, everything in that water is considered a threat until proven otherwise. If it's a guppy, it could be a shark until you know it's a guppy. And I think as black men, we need to realize we're in shark-infested waters. And if we don't sit our young men down and we don't talk to them about perception, and we don't talk to them about stereotypes, we're doing them a huge disservice.
It starts in the house. It starts in the home. And yeah, well, Mitch Romney got locked up. Well, where was his father?
Yeah.
You know, I did talk about my three closest friends, and they did, you know, 15 and 25, one did 28, this and that. I was the only one of the three that had a father in my life, even though my parents were together. But I still had a father who was a gentle man and a good example.
Yeah.
And they didn't. We can blame the system if we want it. But they didn't lock any of us up at 7.
Yeah.
We were all doing enough to get locked up. At 13, my parents sent me in another direction. They didn't have anybody to help them, and they kept doing what they was doing. And the system got them. So the system was rigged, but all the more reason not to help it.
The number one problem domestically facing this country is the breakdown of the family. And President Obama said it. I didn't. A black kid, or kid, not just a black kid, a kid raised without a dad, is 5 times more likely to be poor and commit crimes, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in jail. So you're far more likely to end up in jail without having a dad than you are because of a white racist cop.
For example, I got pulled over by the police, come over to my window, flash his light in my face, hand on my pistol. I can handle that 2 ways. I can start yelling and screaming and telling him you're a racist and he don't know why. You're doing this wrong. Or I can say, yes, officer, no, officer, or we done, officer.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them are going to have drastically different outcomes.
Half the homicides in this country are committed by and against black people. Last year, there were 14,000 homicides, not talking about suicides, talking about homicides.
Mm-hmm.
Half of them were black, 96% of them black on black of that 7,000. Where are the Black Lives Matter people on that?
What happens with young black men, everything is susceptible to the question of your manhood.
Mm.
And what's going on in these streets ain't got nothing to do with my manhood.
Interesting.
If I'm a fighter police, I'm going to fight him in a controlled environment, a court of law. I'm not going to fight
fight them on the streets. In Baltimore, where Freddie Gray was killed, died in a van, yeah. You have a city that's 45% black. City council is 100% Democrat. The majority of city council is black. The top cop at the time was black. The number two cop was black. The majority of the command staff is black. The mayor is black. The AG is black. And yet here we are talking about racism. I mean, it's absurd.
All cops aren't bad cops. 99% of cops are really good dudes and women. 99% of the people I've met that are cops are dope. I have a lot of friends that are cops. But that 1%, that's the problem. And you want to give yourself every opportunity not to end up a statistic.
965 people were shot by cops last year and killed. 4% of them were white cops shooting unarmed blacks. In Chicago in 2011, 21 people were shot and killed by cops. In 2015, there were 7. In Chicago, which is a third black, a third white, and a third Hispanic, 70% of the homicides are black on black. About 40 per month, almost 500 in a year. Per year, last year in Chicago, and 75% of them are unsolved. Where's the Black Lives Matter on that? The idea that a racist white cop is shooting unarmed black people is a peril to black people is BS.
Black History Month, you find ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to our month? Oh, come on. What are you doing yours? Which month is Black History Month?
Come on. I'm Jewish.
Okay.
Which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Oh. Oh.
Why not?
Yeah.
Do you want one?
No.
No, I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black History is American history.
Abraham Lincoln, as my colleague said, fought a war to preserve the Union. That republic allowed for the people of the United States, under our Constitution, to amend it, therefore removing slavery, and then moving forward to the Voting and Civil Rights Act, and also the suffrage movement for women.
At the same time, and you would say it as strong as anyone, it's no excuse for bombing and destroying your own neighborhood. And burning down.
Quick mobs is how they get turned into that.
Yeah.
What's to be gained? You know, you stop for one split second to think burning and looting doesn't help you in any way.
Understand, y'all. But like it was already said, I doubt y'all and y'all have as upset as I am. So if I'm not over here wilding up, if I'm not over here blowing up stuff, if I'm not over here messing up my community, then where y'all going?
I'm an always continue to say the riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. I'm still convinced that non-violence is the most potent weapon available to oppress people in their struggle for freedom and justice. I feel that violence will only create more social problems than they will solve.
Let's switch it up, y'all. Let's switch it up.
Yeah. Amen.
Do this peacefully. Please. My brother moved here from Houston, and I used to talk to him on the phone. He loved it here. He started driving truck. He was good. So I know he would not want y'all to be doing this.
So I will continue to convene riots and continue to say to my brothers and sisters that this is not the way. Continue to affirm that there is another way.
What you just finished hearing was some very important Denzel Washington, a rapper whose name eludes me, but also you heard just a whole bunch of people taking different perceptions and perceptions about the myth of a systematic racism. And what bothers me more than anything is that many of these people have made it. They're millionaires. And it's very easy to step on the other side of the fence and not look back with any knowledge about all of a sudden forgetting about what you went through to get to where you are. The brother who was a rapper just a few minutes ago indicated that he had never experienced racism. Racism is so sneaky that if you grew up in a society and never, it depends on where you live. If you lived in New York or if you lived in different parts of the North, you may not have ever been able to experience or know that you were experiencing any form of racism because it's so sneakily done. However, if you lived in the South where things are done blatantly in your face and dare you to do anything about it, you would be able to see some of the systematic aspects of it in the Midwest as well as in the North. But those particular individuals don't realize race riots were not started by black people. Black people did not start race riots. Riots started here in this country going as far back as the 1800s. There were all kinds of riots. As a matter of fact, the Boston Massacre was a riot where Crispus Attucks was shot by the British. There are different forms of riots. One might be considered not so much of a riot. It could be considered to be just a way of people expressing themselves. No, I'm not in favor of people burning down their own property or things like that. I am in favor of peaceful marches. But I do have a problem when there are brothers out there who have a hard time of understanding what's going on in today's society. Let's listen to some more of Denzel Washington's life advice, and which I think left me speechless. Let's listen.
I was 20 years old. I was at my lowest point. And then one day, and I remember the exact day,
March 27, 1975, I was helping my mother in a beauty shop. My mother owned a beauty shop up in Mount Vernon. And there was this older woman who was considered one of the elders in the town. And I didn't know her personally, but I was looking in the mirror. And every time I looked in the mirror, I could see her behind me, and she was staring at me. She just kept looking at me. Every time I looked at her, she kept giving me these strange looks. So she finally took the dryer off her head and said she said something I'll never forget. First of all, she said, somebody give me a piece of paper. Give me a piece of paper. She said, young boy, I have a prophecy, a spiritual prophecy. She said, you are going to travel the world and speak to millions of people. I began at Fordham University as a pre-med student. I took a course called the Cardiac Morphogenesis. I couldn't read it. I couldn't say it. I sure couldn't pass it. So then I decided to go into pre-law, then journalism. And with no academic focus, my grades took off in their own direction. I was a 1.8 GPA one semester, and the university very politely suggested that it might be better to take some time off. I found that nothing in life is worthwhile unless you take risks. Nothing. Nelson Mandela said, there is no passion to be found playing small and settling for a life that's less than the one you're capable of living. Fail big. You will fail at some point in your life, accept it. You will lose. You will embarrass yourself. You will suck at something. There's no doubt about it. In the acting business, you fail all the time. Early on in my career, I auditioned for a part in a Broadway musical. Perfect role for me, I thought. So I'm in the rings. I'm about to go on stage. But the guy in front of me, he's singing like Pavarotti. And I'm just shrinking. I'm getting smaller and smaller. So he said, oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. And you'll be hearing from us. So I come out with my little sheet music. And so I tuned that and get the job. But the next part of the audition, you call me back. The next part of the audition is the acting part of the audition. Now I'm like, hey, out there, maybe I can't sing, but I know I can act. So they pair me with this guy. And again, I didn't know about musical theater. And musical theater was big, so they could reach everyone all the way in the back of the stadium. And I'm more from the realistic, naturalistic kind of acting where you actually talk to the person next to you. So I don't know what my line was. My line was, well, hand me the cup. And this line was, oh, I will hand you the cup, my dear. The cup will be there to be handed to you. I didn't get the job. But here's the thing. I didn't quit. I didn't fall back. I walked out of there to prepare for the next audition, and the next audition, and the next audition. I prayed. I prayed. And I prayed. But I continued to fail, and fail, and fail. But it didn't matter, because you know what? There's an old saying, you hang around the barbershop long enough, sooner or later you're going to get a haircut. So you will catch a break. And I did catch a break. Last year, I did a play called Fences on Broadway. And someone talked about it. Won the Tony Award. But here's the kicker. It was at the Court Theater. It was at the same theater that I failed that first audition 30 years prior. Reggie Jackson struck out 2,600 times in his career, the most in the history of baseball. But you don't hear about the strikeouts. People remember the home runs. Fall forward. Thomas Edison conducted 1,000 failed experiments. Did you know that? I didn't know that. Because the 1,001st was the light bulb. Fall forward. Now, I'm sure in your experiences in school and applying to college and picking your major and deciding what you want to do with life, I'm sure people have told you to make sure you have something to fall back on. Make sure you got something to fall back on, honey. But I never understood that concept, having something to fall back on. If I'm going to fall, I don't want to fall back on anything except my faith. I want to fall forward. I figure at least this way I'll see what I'm going to hit. Fall forward. The point is, every graduate here today has the training and the talent to succeed. But do you have the guts to fail? While it may be frightening, it will also be rewarding. Because the chances you take, the people you meet, the people you love, the faith that you have, that's what's going to define you. Keep working. Keep striving. Never give up. Fall down 7 times. Get up 8. Ease is a greater threat to progress than hardship. Without commitment, you'll never start. But more importantly, without consistency, you'll never finish. It's not easy. If it was easy, there'd be no Kerry Washington. If it was easy, there'd be no Taraji Henson, P. Henson. If it were easy, there'd be no Octavia Spencer. But not only that, if it were easy, there'd be no Viola Davis. If it were easy, there'd be no Michael T. Williamson, no Stephen McKinley Henderson, no Russell Hornsby. If it were easy, there'd be no Denzel Washington. So, dreams without goals
are just dreams, and they ultimately fuel disappointment. So have dreams, but have goals, life goals, yearly goals, monthly goals, daily goals. Don't confuse movement with progress. Remember, just because you're doing a lot more doesn't mean you're getting a lot more done. In order to achieve your goals, you must apply discipline, which you've already done, and consistency every day, not just on Tuesday and just a few days. You have to work at it every day. You have to plan every day. You've heard the saying, we don't plan to fail, we fail to plan. Hard work works. Working really hard is what successful people do. What are you going to do with what you have? I'm not talking about how much you have. Some of you are business majors. Some of you are theologians, nurses, sociologists. Some of you have money. Some of you have patience. Some of you have kindness. Some of you have love. Some of you have the gift of long-suffering, whatever it is, whatever your gift is. What are you going to do with what you have? And it's not how much you have. It's what you do with what you have. We all have different talents. Some of you will be doctors, some lawyers, some scientists, some educators, some nurses. The most selfish thing you can do in this world is help someone else. Why is it selfish? Because the gratification, the goodness that comes to you, the good feeling that I get from helping others, nothing's better than that. Well, I have traveled the world. And I have spoken to millions of people. But that's not the most important thing, the success that I've had. The most important thing is that what she taught me and what she told me that day has stayed with me since. I've been protected. I've been directed. I've been corrected. I've kept God in my life, and it's kept me humble. I didn't always stick with him, but he always stuck with me. So stick with him in everything you do. If you think you want to do what you think I've done, then do what I've done. Today is the beginning of the rest of your life, and it can be very frightening. It's a new world out there. It's a mean world out there, and you only live once. So do what you feel passionate about. Take chances. Don't just aspire to make a living. Aspire to make a difference.
Wow. That was Denzel Washington at his best, who actually was talking about something a little more different than race relations. He was talking about the possibility of you being successful and what you have to do in order to be that way. We all have to go through a process of learning something called survival skills. And it's called, and when I was at the University of Massachusetts, it was a course called survival structures. And it was about how to succeed and be successful and to go around corners instead of running into brick walls. Well, as I said, today's show is going to be much shorter, and we're going to be bringing the show to a conclusion because it is going to be shorter. You've been listening to Getting It Done, and I have been your host, Dr. Walter Dean. Our show will be longer on Friday. Have a good week. And remember that some things are worth working for. Have a good day.